Hello, this is Ron Simpkins. Good to be with you today. Title of my teaching today is Longing for a Homeland, or you could title it God's Homeless People. The Bible's a book for immigrants who are never quite at home. Last week, Renee challenged us to allow God to make our communities of shared trust in God more and more our home. A very biblical and wonderful challenge with many potential blessings from God. Let's keep asking God to help us fulfill this calling and to receive those wonderful promises that come with it as God's Spirit is asked to fill us more and more. So please don't hear anything I say today wrongly, not as somehow in contrast with that challenge that I believe. In fact, I've spent my adult life working with others to build new covenant into a community where God can be at home with us and make us at home more and more, and our lives and resources be shared. I am certainly 100% for allowing God to create all the community relationships that can be created. In fact, Donna and I, my wife, stayed 50 years in a community we meant to stay only for 3 years. Because of those relationships with God and the people in this community. So I believe in belonging as much as we know how and being a part of the people as much as we can. And it's not just our fellowship and church. I want Champaign-Urbana to act like a community and be a people who care about others and want the United States to become better and better a community of caring and sharing. Try as best I know how to support local efforts to provide food, housing, medical care so that we can be more of a community where people can have a home that's good and just. As far as the nation goes, one of the things that especially attracted me to Barack Obama years ago was that he was a community organizer working to help less socially empowered people have a voice in our nation. When we think back to people that our scripture from Hebrews talked about this morning, people like Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, Jacob, Leah, Rachel, their children, we're talking about people who lived their lives trusting God's promise that God was creating a community of people through them and their descendants. In fact, even just during the life of Abraham and Sarah, who always identified themselves as immigrants, they also built a household community of apparently 1,000 or more people, their own little small town, even though they lived in a land where they didn't own a special piece of property. So, to be clear, neither the Bible nor what I'm trying to say today is about not caring about this world and the communities we're connected to. And also, I find that every promise in the Bible, every promise from God, and in fact, most things in life, have an on the other hand to them. A reality that becomes an integral part of the Jewish rabbinic tradition. If you've ever watched Fiddler on the Roof, you can just picture the rabbi on the one hand, on the other hand, and even way more dramatically, Tevye, with his hands going, and on the one hand, and on the other hand, even as he prayed and talked to God. These dynamic tensions, or what's sometimes called polarities, at first blush can seem like they're in contradiction to one another and pulling in opposite directions. But I think a much better picture is to picture them as two ends of a teeter-totter. A teeter-totter that needs to have God in the middle at the fulcrum, guiding us to understand which end is supposed to be up now and keeping the right end up at the right time. Here are two quick examples of how this dynamic tensions work. They can seem like contradictions, but they're really not. They're just two ends of something that's both realities and both very important, but not easy for us to keep the right end up. Any parent, any teacher who deals with children knows that you have to have guidelines and rules. And that children have to have freedom of choice if they're going to grow and become the people that they need to become as they mature. But it's not easy to figure out when to impose and enforce the guidelines and the rules and when to let choices be made, even if you don't think they're the best ones. Every office manager deals with the same thing. It's a human problem. In an office or in a scientific lab, when do you tell the people that are working under you, follow the guidelines? And when do you let them make some choices and take some risks? And whether they turn out good or bad, they often turn out to be the ones that break through. Which end of the teeter-totter should be up now? There's no final solution. Both things are important. We just keep having to figure out which end needs to be up now. The same thing's true about skepticism or questioning and trust. If we can't trust, our life becomes totally cynical, for some people totally fearful, and it certainly can become more and more isolated if we don't trust anyone, God or any humans. On the other hand, if we can't be skeptical and ask questions and not fully trust, we continue to believe every lie and falsehood we've ever believed or ever been taught. So, which end up? When is it that I need to be questioning? When is it I need to trust? We need God to show us which end up. There are many more of these dynamic tensions. Another one is fear and not fearing. It's wise sometimes to fear. The Bible talks about being wise and fear, things that can destroy. Also, one of the constant themes in the Bible is don't fear. Which end needs to be up now? So we need God to show us how to live in a world where there's no resolution to these things that's once and final, but instead we need help knowing which end should be up. I would suggest that one of the biggest weaknesses of both conservative and progressive politics and theologies in America tends to be that both groups, the conservatives and the progressives, tend to think that we can make this a proper, permanent homeland. Many Christian conservatives think it's just a matter of going back to, quote, the founding fathers or to the 1950s or whatever. And many progressives say, and I think believe, we can, by going forward, make it the homeland that fulfills the best ideals and that somehow the arc of justice will always be guaranteed to win in the long run. Suggest that view that we can make this age our homeland is certainly not the one of the Bible, not the Gospels, not the letters, not the Torah, not the prophets, and not the writings of what we often call the New and Old Testament. They beg us to live our lives and pursue becoming more and more in the image of God, knowing that we can never fully arrive in this age, that it's always going to be a journey toward a homeland that's yet to come. That was the message in our scriptures that we read earlier today. Everyone who's trusting God and choosing God's values and God's desire for full justice for everyone and righteousness for everyone, and stubborn commitment to everybody's good, is always going to partly feel like an immigrant, an alien, an exile in this age and in this world. It's always been true. It is true. A few of the many scriptures that emphasize this reality. We just heard read Hebrews 11. It talks about how those early forefathers and foremothers lived as strangers and immigrants on the earth. They also tried to make homes and lived for the good of their countries, but they always understood we need something better. There's something God's promising that we just can't get there yet, except move it toward it and trust that God will bring it someday. The Philippians passage in the New Testament was read also, our citizenship's in heaven. We still need transformation that we can't do, that God's going to have to bring in the future to bring us into the image of God. And then some we haven't read yet, like the whole letter of 1 Peter is based on the fact that Jesus followers are always going to be immigrants in the world. 1 Peter 1:1 starts like this, Peter, an apostle of Jesus the Messiah, to God's chosen strangers in the world, the diaspora, the scattered people, the exiled people. And then the letter of 1 Peter ends, she who is in Babylon, which was his code name for the Roman Empire at his day, but would be our code name for any empire in any nation, she who is in Babylon, who's likewise chosen, sends you greetings. So does my son Mark. The entire letter of 1 Peter is a reminder that there's something about trying to follow Jesus that will always keep us as immigrants in the world, not quite at home. Jesus said it clearly too. John 17:14-16 contains a phrase that's often repeated and sometimes misused as though it means we don't care about this world. But remember, Jesus also said God so loves the world, and he lived it. But he said there, my disciples don't belong to this world. John 17:14-16, just as I don't belong to this world. I'm not asking you to take them out of the world, but keep them safe from the evil one. They don't belong to this world, just as I don't belong to this world. It's a common experience of immigrants that they never fully belong, even when they're trying to. That was a bit of my experience growing up in East Tennessee. I had a father who had grown up on the streets of Chicago, a northern father, and somehow, even though my mother was southern, everybody knew I wasn't quite really southern, and you don't ever quite totally belong in some of the southern states if you're not got a long, long genealogy of being Southern. Even my Southern grandfather occasionally referred to me somewhat derisively as a Yankee. Of course, my experience of not fully belonging growing up in East Tennessee was nothing compared to the experience of so many non-whites in the United States all through the centuries of the existence of this country. And intentionally by some on the increase again right now. An important aside, we don't dare fail to notice or forget that all the current emphasis on ostracizing and deporting immigrants is really still undergirded with a basis of ethnic superiority and white privilege. It's clear that it is. You don't have to dig very deeply to see it. Absolutely, we want to work to make the immigrants who are in this country and coming to this country as at home as possible when we have something to do about it and can do something about it. In fact, it's often not mentioned, kind of especially by many Christians, but the majority of people trying to come across the southern border even share our faith in God and in Jesus. But whether they do or not, we want to be people who try to make a place. But it's also true that learning that we're immigrants and that we're never going to be fully at home is a reality that we might learn from the experience the Dreamers have recently had, who thought they were at home, thought this had become home, that they were fully integrated into the culture, and then found out, well, not quite, not really. So you don't have to be surprised that following Jesus, if you really take it seriously, will sometimes make you very aware that you're not at home, that you're an immigrant, an exile. Our Jewish brothers and sisters seem to have, since the third or fourth century, often understood this better than many Christians have, that there's always something about being who we are that's going to make us not quite fully at home. So God's immigrant people, if you and I accept this mission to be God's immigrant people, what does it mean? Jeremiah and the prophets, the prophet Jeremiah, told the immigrant exiles of his time very clearly what it means, and he described our teeter-totter quite powerfully. Life as God's immigrant people has two sides to it, two ends to the teeter-totter, and we definitely need God to help us know which end up at which moment. One side, Jeremiah said in these words, seek the peace and prosperity of the city, the civilization of Babylon he was referring to which I, God, have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you'll prosper. Jeremiah 29:7. The other end of the teeter-totter in Jeremiah 51:6-7. Flee from Babylon. Run for your lives. Do not be destroyed because of her sins. Jesus lived both sides of that teeter-totter in his faithful life. Jesus cared very much about this world. His teachings, his actions are just filled with concern for healing, for feeding people, reclaiming social outcasts, making and loving friends, sometimes called disciples, that he loves so much. He cries over the broken parts of his beloved city, Jerusalem. And yet, Jesus is found guilty and executed as not properly belonging to the empire, not properly belonging to the nation, not properly belonging to his church. And he warns us, you have to take up your cross daily, meaning we have to be ready to endure the shame that can come from just not quite fitting into the value systems of this world that insist on dominating, insist on stoking fears. He tells us we can't give our allegiance to anyone else. As a follower of Jesus, you can't give your allegiance to any ism or institution or nation. They're not your homeland. You'll always be asked by God to live in trust and expectation that God's going to come through with a future homeland where we can live face to face with God and with one another and with God's Messiah forever. Just like Jeremiah and Jesus, Paul reflected back on how Jesus had lived and what he had taught about this status of immigration. And powerful words, reading from Romans 12:1-2. The translation I'm reading is kind of an amalgamation of several different translations, and I checked it out with a very good friend who's a Greek scholar too. It reads like this. Therefore, I'm begging you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to present your bodies as sacrifices, living, holy, and pleasing to God. This is your most reasonable way of serving God. Do not continue conforming any longer to the pattern of this present culture, but continue being transformed by letting God renew your mind. Then you'll be able to prove by continually testing what God's will is, what's good, pleasing, and mature. Obviously, Paul believed that the default, if we're not letting God change us and transform us daily, the default will be we will conform to the cultural patterns that are not the homeland God's trying to create. So if we can never fully find a homeland in this age, what's the homeland God's promising like, and is it worth it? Jesus thought it was. The passage that we read earlier from Hebrews was read earlier in our time. talked about Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah and Jacob and Leah and Rachel and many, many others. And it ends this way in Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. So then, with endurance, let's also run the race that's laid out in front of us. Since we have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let's throw off any extra baggage, get rid of the sin that trips us up, and fix our eyes on Jesus, trust pioneer and perfecter, or sometimes translated trailblazer and completer. He endured the cross, ignored the shame, for the sake of the joy that was laid out in front of him, and sat down at the right side of God's throne. One way I'd like to think about this future homeland is it's like this, but better, because I know we can't fully imagine, even when we try, a world where the world is really what it ought to be in its relationship with God and with one another, with ourselves. I'm sure that the homeland that God is preparing is better than even the most inspired writers could ever understand or imagine or help us understand. But if you take seriously what they have written and what they imagine and image and tell us from God's Spirit working in them, that homeland is like, pretty exciting. I'll refer to just a few of this, and I don't have time except just to summarize them. In Romans 8, 18 through 25, Paul says, that homeland will be the fulfillment of the longing that we feel in all the creation, that just is just longing to be not so broken and bent and filled with futility. And he says, particularly, we humans. And then he wryly says, actually, it's we humans that are what is taking God so long. God will be able to bring the creation to its fulfillment quickly, taking him a lot of work to get us there. Jesus in Matthew 5:5, we often call the Beatitudes, said very clearly, the meek will inherit the earth. People following him are going to inherit the earth. But it's that new earth, the renewed earth. He was referring back to Psalm 37, a promise in the Old Testament too. And the book that is so much a book about these images is Revelation, a book that often people shy away from, but it's a powerful book, powerful imagery. Picks up the imagery of Isaiah about the new heavens, new earth, Ezekiel about the resurrection of the people of dry bones, Amos about remaking nature so that the sower and the reaper, everything's so plentiful, they run into each other. But the Revelation is also really, really filled with imageries of the dark side. So let's just think a moment about both. One of John's goals is to give us imagery that makes that powerful dark side very clear to us. In Revelation 12 and 13, he describes the world system, the dark side of it, as ruled by the evil dragon, Satan, the adversary, who chases God's people into exile, makes them immigrants. And this dragon has two beasts that serve the dragon and want the dragon's power. One of them is the seven-headed beast that stands for empires and nations, nationalism. And the other one is the lamb with two horns that's the false church, the false religion, the false messiahs that also want the dragon's power. And doesn't that describe so much of history? And then John adds on in Revelation 18, and the dragon also has a prostitute, a queen who lives in luxury. And then he describes the global business empire of his day and says the global empire of business, of greed, will buy and sell anything, anywhere, including the bodies and souls of humans. Pretty dark imagery. And then John's other goal is to give us imagery of the beauty of where God wants to take humans. It's worth identifying ourselves as immigrants in that darker part to move toward where God's going. And what a homeland he describes. In Revelation 5, it's a homeland where people from every tribe and nation in the history of the world will reign with God and with Jesus on the earth. No nationality admitted, no nationality better than others. The homeland is for all. Revelation 21 says it's a renewed heavens and earth, the whole creation renewed, and God's civilization coming down to earth where God can live here on earth with his forever family face to face. Nobody an immigrant anymore. Revelation 21, 22 through 27 says, and all the best of all the human cultures will be brought by their representatives and incorporated into this new homeland for God's people. Nothing excluded except the shameful and deceitful parts of our cultures. And in Revelation 21, 22 chapters all through them, the amazing imagery of a city that's a garden. You know, we just don't seem capable of making our cities into gardens. But this is a city that's a garden where every plant heals. There's never a shortage of fresh water. And the garden is a city. And we certainly don't seem to be able to do that very well. And it's a city where gold is so not meaningful that it's used for paving the streets, like tar and asphalt. And expensive jewelry is so not meaningful that it's used for the rocks in the walls and gates and doors. And this beautiful city that's a garden and garden of the city brings together what we clearly don't do well. The rural, the outdoors, and the world of cities and technologies. And it all becomes a beautiful city that's a garden. And garden, that's a city. You may say, oh, Ron, this is too much. Prove it. I can't, obviously. It all depends on whether or not God really revealed God's purpose to God's people through the ages who were willing to be immigrants in this world, even as they worked for the good of the world, and especially upon whether or not God raised Jesus from death as the first of many brothers and sisters, as the Bible claims. Like Paul, I say, if it didn't happen, Jesus died for nothing, and we are of all people most to be pitied. But I do believe it happened, and I'm not ashamed to live for something that's in the future. Everybody lives for something in the future. It's just a matter of whether they make their choices based on something they hope for a few minutes from now, a few months from now, a few years from now, or the one God promises. So, when we keep asking for more of God's Holy Spirit, we are asking for tastes of being at home now with God's community. And we're also asking for more of the Spirit to keep us immigrants who can never fully be at home in these current systems. Immigrants who are loved by God and looking forward to the homeland God's preparing, where we can live face-to-face with God and with each other. So my closing prayer. To the God and Father of our Lord Jesus the Messiah, I pray, please work in us the miracle of more and more of your Spirit that empowers us to give our lives to loving the world as you and your Son Jesus do, and to never forgetting that we're immigrants in this world who are waiting expectantly for the homeland only you can give us.